Thank you so much for joining us. As many of you know, at Million Marker, we test for individuals' urine to measure the level of toxic chemicals within their bodies. And increasing studies have shown that these chemicals, environmental toxins, are impacting our health in many ways, namely disrupting, hijacking our body, how we body interpret hormones. And we're now learning that environmental toxins and may impact our body's genes. And this is a growing sector in science known as epigenetics. And today we're really excited to get an intro into epigenetics from Dr. Tyler Panzner. Dr. Tyler has a PhD in molecular and cellular pharmacology and specializes in personalized health optimization. So we can't really wait to pick his brain about epigenetics and how environmental toxins may impact them. So I'm gonna. Let's see. Oh, hey, hi, Dr. Tyler.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am doing great. Excited to share some knowledge and hear what you guys are doing over at Million Marker.
Super excited. I have always been super fascinated about epigenetics. So I'm so glad like you agreed to come on and then give our audience a bit of intro, and then maybe we can do a deep dive in the future.
Absolutely.
Okay, so before we start, tell us a little bit about your background and like how you became a molecular and cellular pharmacology expert.
Sure. So I got my bachelor's degree at the University of South Florida, majoring in cell molecular biology. And I went right from that into my PhD at Stony Brook University. The first half of my PhD, I was really fascinated with mood and behavior. So neuropharmacology, so how drugs and substances affect mood, behavior, and the brain. The first half of the PhD, I studied all the different cell types in the brain, neurons, different glial types. And I actually transitioned into a tumor immunology lab focusing on the role that exosomes play, which are a type of signaling extracellular vesicle that and seeing the role that that plays in breast cancer metastasis and tumor immunology. So crosstalk between the tumor and the host immune system. But it wasn't until around two-thirds through my PhD, once 23andMe started getting pretty big, that I got really interested in genetics. I took graduate genetics courses, but I really had a passion and kind of had an aha moment when I realized I could know what my DNA is like. I can figure out which of my proteins are mutated. And what if I can try to find natural solutions first, to directly address the underlying root cause issues for my ailments? So since then, I've been analyzing the 23andMe data of friends and family for a long time now. And very recently, I partnered up with StealthDecode to kind of bring that to the masses and really try to bring very nuanced discussion to really, really precision medicine. I believe that all different health ailments have some sort of genetic root cause. That's not saying that every ailment is directly caused by the genetics itself. However, I think they make you much more predisposed to certain types of ailments, whether that be anxiety, depression, inflammation, allergies, or I'm happy to talk with you a little bit, even make you more predisposed to endocrine disrupting chemicals. We could just call them EDCs just for simplicity, but your blueprint of your DNA can really dictate a lot about how your body behaves. So I'm still a huge believer in conventional medicine, and I do think pharmaceuticals absolutely have their place in medicine, but I think they're overutilized and kind of a first line of treatment when I really think we should be trying to find targeted natural solutions first. If you can afford that time-wise, if your disease isn't too severe, try that out first. You may get some relief. You may not, and the pharmaceuticals are always there, but I think personalization of everything is really going to dramatically improve patient health outcomes.
Oh, 100%. We often tell people that, given even if we have the same, because we measure environmental toxins, right? And then we always tell people, even you and I have the same exposure because we have different genetic, we would totally respond very differently. And then we say genetic loads the gun, environmental pulls the trigger. Well,
Absolutely.
because in each person's genetic is so different, you just respond like really differently.
Absolutely. And that's not even just for environmental toxins, but so many different detoxification pathways can really make people. Like a good example is histamine metabolism. I have many mutations in histamine metabolism genes. So I'm very sensitive to histamine. So I've had a lot of food sensitivities, allergies my whole life. I actually found out, we're doing mouse studies during my PhD. So giving mice tumors, dissecting tumors, working with mice almost every day. And it wasn't until the very end of my PhD, I actually found out I'm severely allergic to mice. So I wasn't getting any hives or anything, but it was making me feel very tired and lethargic. And that just made me wonder how many people are living their lives being exposed to not just histamine exposure, but all these other triggers, inflammatory triggers. I think virtually everybody has some low level of inflammation. All the headaches, the migraines, the anxiety, the insomnia. I think inflammation is a root cause for so many of these things. I think if you dive deeper, the genetics can explain a lot of that. And a lot of those dysregulated genes, I believe, can be targeted specifically with certain types of natural remedies.
So is that how do you incorporate DNA and genetic testing into your service or helping people interpret this information?
Sure. Yeah. So I am a practitioner with Self Decode. So it's a DNA testing company similar to 23andMe. They also utilize machine learning algorithms to impute far more data, up to 83 million different SNP, which are single nucleotide polymorphisms or misspellings in your genetic code. And they give you over 150 different health reports. It's just overall much easier for someone to read and understand. And they will, for example, give you, you have X mutation and Y supplement has been shown to help. And they'll have a reference right there. They'll have several references. You could click on it. It'll take you to that exact peer-reviewed article that says people with this mutation do better on this supplement than people without the mutation. So it sums it up for you very, very nicely. It's very, very useful. However, regardless, it is so, so much information. So I also offer additional consultation services if people want further explanations, or throughout the years, I've developed a lot of different tips and tricks and personalized supplement regimes that are connecting dots that Self Decode and other people haven't really connected yet, just because I've been doing this for so long, and a super hyper detail focused approach to things. The little things matter. One supplement that may help you for one mutation might actually make you feel worse because of another mutation. So having someone that knows the big picture there can really help you hone in on, I like using just 2 to 4, maybe 5 different vitamins and supplements. So you're not using, you know, 2 dozen different things at once. You don't really know what's doing what. So I offer that additional consultation services for clients. Anyone interested in that, feel free to reach out to me. Happy to explain more of that to you. But I just started doing that around a month or so ago now. And I've just been so excited about it. You can incorporate blood work into it. Mm-hmm. They have so many big plans for the future. They're constantly updating the reports. As new science comes out, within a week, it's made into a new report and it's applied to your existing DNA. So you're constantly getting fed new cutting edge information.
That's really cool. And I also really love your additional service. And then I think this reflects your pharmacology background, because I could just see when you have, different drugs and different supplements, they could actually interact. And I think having this additional layer of service really helping people think through what's actually important and what's unnecessary is so important.
Absolutely. I'm a very, very deep mechanistic signaling pathway type of guy. I'm a puzzle solver. I view the human body as a puzzle and a bunch of levers. This is overactive. This is underactive. What can we do to bring this up, bring this down while not affecting something else over here? So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm still learning somewhat as I go, because it's just such a brand new field. And I don't focus on one specific niche, whether it's mood regulation, inflammation, kidney stones, vitamin A absorption, all these different things. You can get information through Self Decode. So I'm really trying to tackle all of this at once and just learn as much as I can. I'm excited now. I've been reading more papers now than I have in the past year, just because now I'm just so inspired and really excited that I'm helping people at a larger scale now.
That is so cool. So we thought we just talked about a bunch of jargons. And I think let's get back to the basic a little bit to explain, since this is the intro. So what are genes and then how do they influence our health?
Definitely. So genes are segments of our DNA or our genome. Our genome, think of it as around 3 billion letters, which are called nucleotides. And to keep it simple, they can either say A, T, C, or G. And the organization of those four letters, the spelling of that, is what makes up your entire DNA. Think of it as a long string. Genes are segments of the DNA that encode proteins. So those proteins, those genes themselves are transcribed into mRNA. Everyone knows what mRNA now is now after all the COVID stuff. So mRNA is the messenger molecule that gives something in your cells called ribosomes. It gives them the instructions to translate them into proteins. So you have DNA, mRNA is an intermediary, so instructions, and then they're turned into proteins. And those proteins are what carry out all the countless functions in your cells, whether it's enzymes to make serotonin, enzymes to degrade serotonin, a receptor for serotonin to bind onto, an enzyme to detoxify BPA. All these different things are proteins at the end of the day. So your DNA gives the instructions to make proteins. And the genetics come into play where you could have misspellings in the gene, which means the protein will be mostly the same, but one little specific area might be a little bit misspelled. And that misspelling may make the enzyme work too fast or work too slow. So that's why different people can have varying levels of different nutrients, vitamins, signaling molecules, or neurotransmitters. And that's why I think the personalization of it is so important, because every single human being has a very different genome. No person has a perfect genome without mutations. Every single human being has mutations. It just depends on your ancestry, your parents' parents, and the luck of the draw, which of the two alleles you get. So you have two sets of chromosomes, one from mom, one from dad. And when you have children, you either pass on one of your two to your offspring. So kind of based on which one you give, it's a 50-50 shot. Diseases can run in families, but just because your brother has some ailment doesn't mean you're necessarily destined to get it, because we're all not clones of each other, but there's a lot of shared DNA between families.
That makes a lot of sense. So then what are the differences between genetics and epigenetics?
Sure. So genetics, as I said, is the spelling of your DNA. That's basically locked in from birth, and that's not going to change unless you're exposed to a carcinogen, like let's say tobacco smoke or UV radiation. That can mutate your DNA, and your DNA is getting mutated all the time. But normally your cells have mechanisms to repair it. If it doesn't repair it properly, that's what causes cancer. And that cancer cell with the mutated DNA continues to get mutated until it metastasizes, and then surgery isn't an option and you die from metastatic complications. Epigenetics, on the other side, I know you shared the reel that I made. It's basically like a light switch. So it's turning genes on and off. So rather than genetics, the spelling of the gene, how well or not well the gene functions, epigenetics are deciding whether the gene is expressed, not expressed, whether it's highly expressed or lowly expressed. And the interesting part about epigenetics is that virtually everything we do affects your epigenetics, whether it's the food you eat, toxins you're exposed to, pharmaceutical drugs, natural supplements, your microbiome, social interactions, day and night cycles, seasonal cycles, even the thoughts you think every single millisecond are affecting the epigenetics, your epigenome, they call it, instead of the genome, the epigenome of your cells. So that's why they say thinking good things can make you feel better. If you always have a negative mindset, that can lead to inflammation, which can lead down the road with other factors, as possible diseases down the road, because literally what you think modulates your gene expression. Meditation, they've done study with monks. Meditation is essentially voluntarily controlling your gene expression. Monks that are experts in meditation are actually able to turn on genes that lower inflammation and boost their mood. I first read that paper, I was blown away. I'm like, that is just so freaking cool. And it's exciting because it's in your control. There are things you could do to make your epigenome worse, so more inflammation, or things that can make it better.
Absolutely. And it also, it gives people a sense of control, and not just your mental health, but also like your behavior can really impact your epigenetics than your expression of all the genes and everything. Yeah. So then, at Million Marker, we test for hormone disrupting chemicals like BPA. Do you know if these chemicals could potentially influence epigenetics?
Absolutely. I know BPA is kind of the heavy hitter. Within the endocrine disruptors, the poster child. And that's been very thoroughly demonstrated to affect the epigenetics or the expression of dozens and dozens of different genes. It's been mainly studied in the context of in male reproductive health, especially. So it can affect the spermatogenesis, so the generation of sperm. In addition, it can affect the genes of the sperm itself. So that sperm maybe not as motile or mobile or able to move, and that would have direct consequences to fertility. I think one of the main drivers of infertility in this country, I mean, they give forecasts in the next 10 years, over 50% of couples are just going to be straight up infertile. And I think one of the main drivers of that is the exposure to all these endocrine disrupting chemicals. It's also been shown to regulate genes that promote prostate cancer. It's been shown to make mics less masculine through altering their hormone profiles. And what's even possibly the scariest of all is, let's just say a pregnant mother is exposed to BPA, obviously it could affect her health, but even worse, it could affect the health of her child or the fetus, especially in the early trimesters, because the fetus or embryo doesn't have the detoxification machinery in place. So the adult, the parent, the mother can detoxify the BPA, the fetus can't. So they're going to be so much more susceptible to that. And on top of that, an even scarier thing is the father during at the time of conception. So the epigenome of the sperm during conception is that you're the sperm that fertilizes the egg. Being exposed to BPA as a father during conception or leading up to that, that can have your child have dysregulated epigenetics and cause developmental delays. I know there was a paper that showed that mother exposure to BPA alters the epigenome of the GRIN2B gene.
Yes.
The GRIN2B gene, and that's been associated with a neurological syndrome that's very similar to autistic-like neurological or intellectual disabilities. And they actually tested that. The amount of BPA a mother's exposed to, so they test their urine, has actually been shown to directly correlate with the methylation of this gene. And then they actually showed this trend in females and not males in mice. So they followed that up with female children. I think it was 7-year-old children. And they actually showed that they scored lower on cognitive tests and are more prone to these neurological deficits. And then one thing even crazier than that is you can also affect the gametes of the fetus. So what I'm saying here is a mother exposed to BPA could literally be altering the epigenetics of not only their unborn fetus, but also the sperm cells or egg cells in that fetus. So they could be altering the epigenome of not only their unborn child, but their unborn child's future children. And they call that multi-transgenerational epigenetic dysregulation. And that even just totally blew my mind that you're talking about 2-3 generations now right out the gate that are prone to not even autistic-like phenotypes, but also ADHD, depression, inflammation, addiction, so many of these things.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. I think what I first learned is before you even get to the second generation, it's like people used to think that these chemicals don't cross placental barrier, they don't cross blood-brain barrier, but we were totally wrong. Not only they pass placental barrier, they will transmit to the following generation.
Yeah, and not only do they cross the placental barrier, I know that phthalates have been shown to dysregulate signaling pathways involved with placental formation itself. So during pregnancy, early stages of pregnancy, you're not going to be forming the placenta as well and not be able to transmit as much nutrients. So not only do they cross it, they dysregulate the formation of it.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. So somebody just asked, could you quickly explain what BPA is?
Yeah, so BPA is bisphosphonyl A. It's a component in plastics. I know there's a couple different types of BPA. I think there's like BPA, BPS, BPP, I believe. I know there's a couple that you guys check for. And those are in a lot of different plastic products. And a lot of plastic manufacturers now say they're BPA free, but they also have other types of BPA, I guess, subspecies, I guess you want to call it, that can actually be even more toxic than BPA. So they have the sticker on that little protein shaker bottle. It's BPA free. But what about all the other type of BPA related endocrine disruptors that they're not even checking for? So especially when you heat up plastic. So me personally, I move to all glass bowls when I microwave anything. So it's especially dangerous when you are heating up plastic. Plastic itself should be avoided when possible, but especially when heating it up. So the number one tip here is, if you're microwaving food, do not microwave it in anything plastic. That is just asking for trouble.
Absolutely. So we call it a regrettable substitute. So that meant once BPA was banning baby products, manufacturers started using these alternatives. And
BPS, BPF. Now we have seen literally swapping out the letter from BPA all the way to BPC or any combination of them. Many times we don't even know. And as you said, it's like, it's actually way worse than BPA. So yeah. Yeah.
Trust yeah. It's much worse too. And also, yeah, no, it's so much worse. And then it's also another point I want to raise here is, so at least with the BPAs, most of them are ingested orally. So it passes through your liver first, and it can be partially detoxified and broken down because the metabolized products are usually much less toxic than the original toxicant. However, things like phthalate that are makeup products and things that are applied topically, that's absorbed directly into your skin. You're bypassing first-pass hepatic or liver metabolism. So those, they call it the ultimate toxicant, the unmetabolized endocrine disruptor, can get right and directly into your bloodstream. You're essentially like injecting them. It'll be absorbed right through the skin and directly to the bloodstream. And that highly toxic chemical can go directly into your cells and tissues. So the oral process, I guess it's a bit safer, but all the things you put on our skin as well. I know a lot of things, I think oxybenzone and sunscreens as well. I don't think, do you guys test for that as well? So the oxybenzones, and there's a lot of these other chemicals that are coming out that are even worse when they're put on the skin.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have seen people's BPA level trending down because of the alternatives being used, but we definitely see people's level in like phthalates, paraben, people still have them. If they don't use good product, if they don't take quality supplement, the level is up. So that's something to pay attention on for sure. Okay, I want to like dive back to epigenetics.
Sure.
How do a person know if epigenetics are influencing them? Is there any like things that people can tell without testing, or people just need to do the test?
So regarding the epigenetics are always constantly occurring. So it's not so much a question if the epigenetics are occurring. But the epigenetics can also be, it's not just a bad thing. Epigenetics can definitely be a good thing as well. A good example I like to give is vitamin D. So you get vitamin D from sunlight, and vitamin D is a master regulator of hundreds of different genes epigenetically. Two examples I like to give are the enzymes that make serotonin and dopamine. So you get sunlight on your skin, vitamin D is synthesized in your body, it travels through your tissues into your cells, it binds a nuclear receptor, and it activates the expression or demethylates these genes. So those proteins are expressed at a higher level and you produce higher levels of serotonin and dopamine. So that vitamin D is boosting your mood because it's epigenetically regulating these things. I do know that the epigenetic testing is a much newer field than the genetic testing. So it's much earlier on. I honestly haven't done too much research into that yet for different brands and stuff, just because I've been so busy with my genetic side of things right now. But I do know it's coming along. They basically measure the methylation pattern of your genome. So the areas that are methylated can predict or tell you what genes are highly expressed or lowly expressed. And those can be connected and try and see what type of practices may be able to adjust certain genes. The field itself isn't there yet where they could say, you know, this one gene is demethylated, you should go, you know, walk outside and hold your breath for 10 seconds, and then it'll fix that gene. We're nowhere near there yet.
Yeah.
Genetics is very early in the grand scheme, and epigenetics is even younger than that. But again, the fact that it's in your control is what makes it so interesting and promising in the future. So yes, there are tests out there that do measure the methylation. They call it your biological age. So as you age, your methylation changes. And that's believed to be one of the main drivers of aging itself. So they've shown that vitamin D serum levels actually inversely correlate with your epigenetic age. So the higher serum vitamin D levels, the lower your epigenetic age is. So the meaning, you have higher expression of genes that are linked to longevity.
Wow, this is so interesting. So I think in the best way is like people should first understand their genetic. Like, for example, use self-decode to understand, like, you know, what are your gene expression, like what are your susceptibilities, and then start taking actions from that point. And then later on, as you know, epigenetic testing and all these interpretation getting more mature, then you can kind of like moving on to that direction.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too, it's just so much information. It's never going to be, you know, the perfect stage, you know, everything is totally perfect because we are, humans are meant to be stressed at times. You know, we're meant to have highs and lows throughout life. You know, it's not supposed to be just sunshines and rainbows all the time, but a lot of it, I think, comes back to inflammation. Inflammation is the driver of virtually every chronic disease, at least one of the main driving mechanisms. And the way that, for example, the polyphenols everyone talks about in fruits and different herbs you should eat that are good for your health, they're good for your immune system. Well, how are they good for your immune system? They alter the epigenetics of your immune cells so they can make them less inflammatory and more anti-inflammatory. So all these health supplements and pills that we take to help us, they're helping us not by mutating our genome, they're helping us by altering the epigenetics of the cells in our body.
I love it. So you also have some supplement that you endorse and recommend. So like, how do you go about curating these recommendations?
Sure. So I take a look at the self-decode data on my pro account, the practitioner account. I have some additional analysis tools. And I really try to take a look at, well, first, if they can do account, what are the main symptoms they're trying to resolve? Because they have reports for everything. There's 83 million genes. I can't possibly look at every, you know, individual single one. And also because a lot of them don't have too much data yet. But I tend to think the ones that do have significant data, especially human data on things. And I take a look at ones that are directly related to the symptoms. So if someone's anxious, I tend to look at genes that are involved with neurological pathways to see if maybe, I can give you a good example. I personally have two mutations. So both copies of my COMT enzyme are mutated. What does that mean? So the COMT gene, that protein is what degrades dopamine and norepinephrine in your brain. So once you release these dopamine and norepinephrine, which is basically adrenaline, you need to degrade that to turn off the signaling. Well, I metabolize those 4 times slower than the average person. So what does that mean? That means under normal conditions, I have higher levels of dopamine. So I have better mood. It helps against depression. It's better focus, more alert. I think it makes me just very excited about things. Any idea I have, I just get good. So excited. And I normally move too quick into things. I'm just so freaking excited to do anything that comes to my head. But the downside of that is when I get stressed or anxious or triggered, my body releases a bunch of norepinephrine and I can't clear it as well. So it also makes you very prone to anxiety and not handling stress very well. However, what are some things that can help speed up the COMT enzyme? SAMe is a vitamin that does that. Magnesium is a mineral that does that. So that's a good example of a targeted vitamin regime. You, and in addition, a certain type of B vitamin may make me anxious. I switched up my B vitamin to a special type. It was hydroxyl and adenosyl B12. I felt so much better. I felt alert, but not stressed or anxious ever. Much more level mood. I actually switched a couple of, maybe 2 months ago. I felt so much better. So those are three examples right there. If someone had those mutations, I mean, I suggest all three at once, but the B vitamins I usually suggest to everybody. And then magnesium, I usually suggest to people across the board because I think 50, 60% of people are deficient in magnesium. So those I would kind of suggest across the board, but I would especially recommend them to people that have this COMT mutation. And that goes for a lot of different pathways, whether it's histamine metabolism. So you need to, if you metabolize histamine much slower, you want to avoid histamine foods. Coffee is very high in histamine. So whenever I have coffee, I never did well on coffee. I would feel kind of just a weird sensation in my eyes and head for years. And now after learning all this stuff, I look back and I think, wow, that was my body reacting to histamine for all these years. And what do you know? That was the same feeling I got, the grogginess, when I would go down and work with my mice. So it's like looking back now, connecting all those dots, that now I know whenever I get that feeling, I'm allergic to something due to the histamine. So if you have decreased histamine clearance, you should definitely consider a low histamine diet. But if you have other mechanisms of inflammation that are overactive that isn't histamine, I wouldn't recommend a low histamine diet. I may recommend a targeted supplement. Like let's say curcumin can block the TNF-alpha pathway, which can be mutated and overactive. That's another type of inflammatory pathway. So I don't want to go too deep in this here, but you kind of get what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
X pathway is elevated. Let's find a natural inhibitor for X pathway and bring it down.
This is just so fascinating. We're just going to have to invite you back. And then
absolutely. I love to come back. Definitely.
This is like just so amazing. So thank you so much. And
absolutely.
One audience asking about like saved cooking pens. We have some of that information on our website if you're interested, because we have been curating like saved product and then saved cooking pans and then all the utensils. You can go to Mail and Marker and then check out our approved product page. It's under resources, so check that out.
Yeah, I'll definitely check out everything there. Now, they're hyper-specializing on the one theme that is endocrine disruptors. I would definitely go check out their stuff. But I do know you want to avoid the Teflon nonstick pans. That's the main key thing that you want to basically throw out. And then the iron as well, the cast iron pans, they may be good, but iron overload, I think, is very prevalent as well. And you can leach off the iron into your food and cause iron toxicity, which can cause issues as well.
Right. We often say don't cook any acidic food in cast iron if you have cast iron. So ceramic is a pretty decent choice. And then, you know, if you're baking, use glass. Definitely. So thank you so much. Oh, my God.
Thank you for having me on.
This conversation, this is too much fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I could talk about this all day. I'm so passionate about it. I'm really excited to really, really bring the nuance to personalized medicine, really help drive it forward. I think a lot of these companies saying they can help you lose weight based on your genes, I think they're kind of, you know, a little ahead of themselves right now, you know, but like the space will get there over time. It's a very hot space. I think some people think it's a lot of mumbo jumbo BS, but I'm telling you, it's not. You just got to use things that are evidence-based.
Yes, absolutely. And then everyone be sure to follow Dr. Tyler, because he's just got so much great information. Sign up with
Thank
T
you.
Code and then just learn more.
Yeah, you feel so free much. To reach out with me, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I had a blast. And yeah, absolutely can't wait to do this again soon.
Okay, see you soon. Bye.
Awesome. Have a good day. Bye.